Welcome back, everyone.
Hello. Welcome.
Oh, there she is.
Yes.
Wondering where my wife was. But nope. I'm Brian Garrido.
I'm Jennifer Garrido.
And welcome back to Throw Open Your Doors, where we take you through our journeys in our marriage and our lives, things mm-hmm. that we've come through. We take you through three things. You know, our trek. You know, how did we get there? Or how did we, you know, how is our journey going to take us? Our tools that we use for that particular trek, and then the takeaways at the end.
Yes. Things that you can do in your own life and your own journey.
Yeah. And that's the goal of it, is that we just want to share our experiences, our testimonies, the things we've gone through, because we look back and even just us planning this podcast, we start thinking about, you know, like we say to ourselves, what are we going to talk about?
Right.
and we do go through that because we, you know, we can talk about our day-to-day lives, you know, what we did today. You know, I got up this morning, I, you know, brushed my teeth, you know, exciting things like that. But you want to go more into, you know, that impactful things that have impacted our lives, I guess, as husband and wife.
Right. And we hope to make you laugh along the way and just hope you enjoy this journey with us.
Yeah. But we've had a busy week since last time we did our last podcast. We've had a lot going on. Journeys. You guys have been to the speech and debate things that we do with our kids.
Yes, we do speech and debate tournaments. This year, we're just doing the speech component, but you go to a tournament and it begins at 7:30 in the morning and goes till the evening. And even though there are long days when you're involved, it just flies by. It's probably like doing, you know, when you go to sports tournaments, like it's just a lot of adrenaline and you're seeing a lot of friends and it's just really fun. And then you come home and you're like wiped out. But yeah, it was really a lot of fun. It
feels like a move when you're moving everything out of a house and you have to crash for the final time. It's, you guys come back exhausted.
Yes, we do. So we drove home really late Saturday night so that way we could just wake up on Sunday morning at home and had a wonderful time with friends, you know, staying with some friends who we love and seeing a lot of friends at the tournament. So it was just a really great time. So we were gone Wednesday to Saturday night, and then
while you guys were doing that, I went to meet with you all, and then I ran another marathon. This is my second one in a row.
Yes,
this was a trail marathon. So for those of you who haven't listened to our podcast before, I'm a ultra marathoner. By times I do run, you know, marathons that are not beyond the 26.2 marathon distance. But this was actually a trail marathon that I've gone to. I've run it four times, and I've won it three.
I know you're being so modest and I'm not really saying it, but it's awesome.
And I've won it three times. So, yeah. So because I was putting together a collage to share with people about what I've done, and I was looking through photos, and I started running this race. This was a race I ran. And I was talking with the race director when I was there this past weekend, and he said, yeah, remember when this happened with COVID? Literally, we ran the race. It was on a Saturday in 2020, and then on that Tuesday, that's when they say the world shut down.
Yes.
When everything. So we were all, like, no one really knew what was going on. Could we still run the race? Could we not run the race? And, you know, at that time, 100 people showed up to run it in 2020, and every 2 years after that, I've been going back. Just because, and I didn't expect it to be every 2 years, but
I know it just worked out. And with us already being nearby, it was just great for you to drive down and run the marathon. So this one was one of the three that you won, which was really awesome. And how was the weather for this particular marathon?
It rained. It rained a lot. And 2 years ago when I did it, we crossed a particular creek and the water was up to our waist high.
Oh my goodness.
And you had to go across. So this time it wasn't waist high. You know, we still just went up to at least our calves, crossing some of the water hazards. But when you're going up, you know, just under 5,000 feet elevation gain and loss, and going up to the top and then coming back down again, sliding down different areas. But it's neat because you get to meet a lot of the other runners when they're finishing. You know, we all just kind of sit around waiting for runners to finish, because when you have 100 people out on the trail, anywhere from, you know, being on the trail for, you know, for 4 hours to, you know, up to, I think someone was still on the trail for 9 hours. I wasn't there for the whole 9 hours, unfortunately, but these people really go and they push themselves to the limit. It's a different feeling compared to a road marathon. I mean, road marathon, don't get me wrong, I still do those also. and do a lot of pacing for that. I'll actually have a third marathon coming up this upcoming weekend during this podcast. So this will be my third different marathon. But it's a different environment when you're in that trail running community of people I've felt before. They're really strong there. We sit around waiting for each other. The only thing we were missing was the fire because it was so raining and those things. But other than that, I left the race, went back to my family, and then we came
you
back
judged,
home.
Right? You I came ju- back I judged, and you judged around.
Judged around, came back home, and yes. So we've just, but after that, we had another birthday in our family.
Yes, our third child. So we have a son and then three daughters. So is our third child turned 16.
She did. She is 16 and she is ready to drive.
Yes, our truck. We have a Dodge Ram 2500 and she is like, I'm ready to like make that my goal, you know, after she gets her license to learn how to drive that eventually. So I can see her totally doing that one day.
Yeah, but then thinking through of our daughter having her 16th birthday, it started having us think about, you know, where were we back in our younger years?
Yes.
Of our, even just kind of even going further back, you know, thinking about the things that are in our past that have kind of affected the way we are in our future, like the things that we've done when we were kids or the things that you're involved in and how that molds you and actually, you know, creates or not creates, but molds you to the person that you are and mm-hmm. your foundation and the things that you encounter and you go through. Yeah. So pretty much our trek is, you know, today was just kind of going back and looking at our passions and interests and mm-hmm. how that kind of molded us into the adults we are, the parents that we are, whether we were parents or not. It still does, you know, the things that you get involved in. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think back to when I was 16 and that was, well, for both of us, because we're only a month apart in age.
Right. I'm older.
Yeah, by a month, as we said. Yes. But at the same time, it was the, you know, when I was 16, it was junior year mm-hmm. in high school.
Right.
That we're going into for both of us mm-hmm. as we're going through that. And you think back to, okay, what was I doing my junior year in high school? And I'm like, oh, I remember what I was involved in. But then even think going further back, the stuff that you're involved in.
Yeah. Well, how old were you when you became a Christian?
I was 16.
So that's a significant year for you.
Yeah. So it was a significant year. It was back in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And that was when that all transpired. Because when we talk about, you know, throw open your doors, the idea was, you know, when we talk about what God imaginably more, you know, anything that God has more than we ask or imagine. And then, you know, we've been waiting, you know, at that time, I didn't understand how God was there guiding me, you know, all the things, mm-hmm. the journeys that I kind of went through in my life. And because we were raised differently mm-hmm. In our households.
Right.
But then both of us being raised in our homes, we both had a foundation and our parents took us to, you know, I mean, I was raised pretty much independently mm-hmm. in my home. You know, I had to do a lot of things on my own or did certain stuff. And the same thing for you. I mean, you were doing a lot of stuff. I mean, the Bible clubs you were doing. And
oh, yeah. Yeah, we had a Bible club at my high school, which was really neat.
And the camps and things. But I think even back further to when you asked the question, if I asked you this question, you know, why did you get involved in the things that you did as a kid? You know, why did you do...
You mean like high school specifically?
Even just younger than that. Like when you think about even elementary school, why did you do what you did?
Well, I grew up in a little church school where everybody went to...
Everything?
Everything together. But it was a beautiful community and everybody still really keeps in touch on Facebook and is just really bonded together. I think there's something really sweet about a smaller church that has a school because like I grew up with... My mom had gone to this church school as a little girl and she grew up in it. And then, you know, my siblings and I did. So we grew up with all of her friends and their children. And, you know, that was really neat. So everything I did was involved with that community until high school. And then I went to an all-girl public high school in Baltimore. And it was, I had to take the regular transit bus to get there. That's how they did it at Western High School. And it was a 45-minute drive. And so I got to know other students just by being on the bus. But my biggest thing in high school was my youth group.
So you jumped straight from...
I did. I'm just telling you the whole thing.
You just went straight from elementary to high school. There was nothing
sorry.
In between.
I'm sorry.
That's all you did. You just went, you didn't do anything. You just.
Well, I was just thinking elementary and middle school.
What did
was
you do
just,
though? So that's what I'm trying to get out of it.
Okay, so you grew up doing a lot of sports.
Well,
and
I'm not
things.
Saying, so you're giving it away. You're giving my answers away already.
You're also telling everybody about the marathon you just ran. So.
Well, who knows? Maybe as a child, I wasn't a runner. Maybe as a child, I was just.
You're funny. Okay, so for me, I feel like I was way more eclectic than you were, but I did love crafts. I mean, you did a lot, don't get me wrong. But I mean, like...
So the question I'm asking you is, how did you learn that? You know, so, you know, when we look at our skills right now, so how did we learn?
Where did I learn? So my mom was a seamstress, and so she taught us how to sew. So when I was 4 years old, my first memory at a sewing machine was when I was 4 years old. And...
I remember seeing a sewing machine when I was 4 years old. I don't think.
Your mom did a lot of sewing.
I used
too,
to play with the knobs, probably. Like turn the little handles on the side and just watch the needle go up and down and like put things underneath it to poke it through, but not for sewing, just for the experimental boy that wanted to see what would happen.
So yeah, which is so cool. So when I was four, I made a little doll dress. My mom taught me how to do that. I had a little Holly Hobby sewing machine that actually worked. It was not a toy. And she taught me how to make a little
dress.
Right
up there with
dress.
The Easy Bake Oven.
So I had that too. But mine was Holly. I was totally into Holly Hobby. So I had a little Holly Hobby.
Yeah, for those of you who have no idea what Holly Hobby is, you're going to have to Google it.
Yeah.
I mean, Holly Hobby had a kickback again, I think, when our oldest daughter was
seven. When she was like,
They made Holly Hobby like a teenage girl.
They tried to bring Holly Hobby back.
They gave her like blue jeans and a hat and make her cool, but... Yeah, I don't think it went that well.
Mine was the Holly Hobby that looked like she was from the 1850s. Yeah.
For those of you now, for those kids who are younger, if you have any kids now, they'll know what, you know, Strawberry Shortcake is making a comeback again. It's like the new retro stuff is coming out. But
they do cycle those things.
That's the era you had. Holly Hobby and Strawberry Shortcake, they were competing against each other.
So sewing.
Sewing, yes.
So sewing, I learned how to sew from my mom. And then as I grew up, I just made all of my own dresses. Even after we were married,
yes.
I was still making my own dresses in the 90s because it was still a thing to do.
Have you ever watched that movie Enchanted where the princess goes into the house and they say, "Where did you make this dress? How did you make it?" And then you see the curtains all cut up and all through the designs. That's probably what Jen was doing. She would just take things and make it.
Yeah. And I like to be... like creative. I didn't like to do things the same way that I saw everybody else. So for example, I made my prom gown for high school.
She did.
And everybody was wearing satin dresses that were all one color.
And poofy.
And they were beautiful. I graduated in 1995. So that was, you know, think back to then, that was the way that they were, the dresses were. And I just like, I just really love floral patterns. And so I got like yards of this floral material and made my prom gown, and it wasn't because I wanted to stand out or particularly be different. It's just like that was my thing. So
talking about being independent, yes, her mother just gave her the freedom to say, here, sew your own dresses, and it still continued because my wife was making me. I'm a huge Miami Dolphins fan, so I remember when we were first married, I was like, oh, look, Miami Dolphins material when you would go to the store. Like and I would have curtains for a Christmas present, or I would turn around and I would have, I'd had pillowcases. I had pajama bottoms. And I just had things, and my wife would sew these things away.
It was fun. But then after we had kids, my mom was the one making clothes for them. Like she would do the heirloom sewing, which was just beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I was busy raising kids, so I wasn't sewing anymore. So there left my sewing. I don't really do much
there
anymore.
But it was still the impression that we have. And now when we look at it, we have then our daughter, our oldest daughter is a seamstress. Well, she sews quite a bit.
Yeah, my mom taught her how to sew. And so
that's kind of neat to see how that's kind of went through generations and passing around.
Yeah, because she made dresses too, like the medieval time period dresses and... Pride and Prejudice era.
Even our son had a cloak that she worked with him on.
Oh, that's right.
And she did that. It was like the project that they do with the grandparent in those areas.
Yes.
So I was a sewer also too. I was a cross stitcher. Now, why don't you ask me how I became a cross stitcher?
So, honey, how did you become a cross stitcher?
Well, I was a very active child in the sense of, as you know, Jen was saying, you know, what she mentioned earlier, how I was a marathoner, and obviously I must have been active as a kid. And yes, my parents had signed me up for anything under the sun. If the rec department was hosting something or offering something, I was signed up for it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, any season of sports that would go on, I was doing the soccer, I was doing the basketball, the baseball, the tennis, you know, classes and or tennis clinics, and anything that was out and available. The one thing my mother would not let me do is I could not do football. She did not want me to do football at all, even though I was trying to be I was being recruited by the high school football coach because I had hand-eye coordination and things like that, which wasn't too hard for some of the, the players. We just needed players.
Mm-hmm.
But there were summer times where my parents, I just needed to get away. So they would send me out away to my aunt's house and my uncle, and I would spend 2 weeks at a time at their just out and away. And to put in perspective here, my aunt was the, like your mom, but she was the quintessential mm-hmm. of the sewing and the arts and crafts stuff to the extreme where, mm-hmm. She would take flowers and organize it a certain way and put the orange peels within the flowers and the scents and the things in array. So, my aunt was definitely one that was, a strong impact in my life. But the one thing that she made sure I started to do was learning how to do cross stitching.
It was very popular back then.
It was very popular back then, but I was doing cross stitching as a, younger 10.
And did you like it?
I gave you a gift.
When we were
married, one of our wedding gifts to each other is we did a cross stitch.
We did, actually.
We worked blessedly that summer before we were both getting married, where she's laughing hysterically right now because Jen was working diligently to finish. She's spending all of her time trying to cross stitch this thing and get it done because, I don't think we each knew that we were crusty. See, this is, when my wife gets giddy, she gets bright red and she gasps and she's trying to get air. And I feel the need as a husband to keep it amusing to her, to keep her laughing as much as I possibly can and see how far along I can go on this.
Oh, you're so funny.
I know I am. But,
yeah. Yes, I remember at our wedding.
Is it all coming back to you
our
now?
Our wedding, our rehearsal dinner. That's when we presented each other our cross stitch that we had worked on.
Mine was an intricate, precious moments.
We were really dating ourselves, but it was.
Yeah, so if you watch, see these precious moments figurines, it's almost as...
Google. If you have no idea what precious moments was.
All these things are talking about.
That used to be popular too, 30 years ago. We had so many of those.
Who knows? It could be back?
I don't see that coming back.
No. There's a woman that I've watched on a video, and she actually takes precious moments figurines. She busts part of it off and repaints them and repurposes them and makes them look like brand new figurines.
Okay, we need to check that out. We did not keep ours, but we did collect them for a while.
Babies. You just had them.
Yeah, oh yeah. So your cross-stitching began with your aunt's house.
It did. I was two major skills, three skills I learned at my aunt's home. No, number one, cross-stitching wasn't the number one, but I did learn it and I did continue doing it because I ended up doing a cross-stitching pattern of the NFL football teams. This is how dire I was. I got to the point where if I'm going to go to her house and I'm going to do cross stitching, then I'm going to make. So I literally made the logos of all of the NFL at the time. It was 30 the NFL football teams. I stitched them all. I think I gave some of them to my brother as a gift.
Wow.
I know.
That's amazing.
I did.
I didn't know that about the NFL. That's why I'm dying all over again. Okay.
So cross stitching was one. And then the other one was because my aunt would take me to the library and I had to go pack out something to do. So she's like, you have to pick out something to do because we're not going to keep you entertained the entire time you're here. So I had to keep myself entertained because, of course, there was no technology, no video games, no TV. It was pretty much I had to fend for myself. I do remember going to see the movie La Bamba with my aunt. That was an exciting time.
Oh, that was a great movie.
Yeah, it was.
That was great.
Yeah, but then we all talked about how Richie Valens died, and
it was very sad.
It was a song in my head. But what happened from there is that the other hobby I picked up was origami. I learned how to do origami really well. And then the final one that I learned what to do was gardening. But not just any kind of gardening. I was the rock mover. She wanted a rock garden. I was constantly moving the rocks. And she got nowhere near me every time I had to move a rock because where the area that they lived, they had a lot of snakes in areas. So she would always say, she'd see me move a rock and she'd run away. And if the snake got out, she'd just scream, kill it, kill it, kill it. I'm like, I am not touching that thing. So I was like relocating snakes. I got to be more familiar with them. But those were my three hobbies to broaden my entire, not just an athlete.
It's cool though that you could go spend a couple of weeks with them.
I think
that's really neat to do that in the summer.
Because this is actually my father's oldest sister. And both my mother and father are from Cuba, and this is my aunt is actually still alive. She's 93. She's older than my father, but she's having them still and talking about the history of Cuba and how they got to the country, to the United States, and those things. So those are the things that we take in and we learn about when you go through. Okay, why do we talk to our grandparents and our parents and things in the past, because that's actually what molds, like I said, molds us for the future. Like the tools of the things we learn from in the past is actually what helps mold us for who we are based upon our character, our values, and things that we go through. Because if we didn't have that foundation, and I know sometimes it's hard to have someone in your life, but it might not be a parent or a grandparent. It might just be a friend or a neighbor that you bond with. Mm-hmm. And you just have that connection with, like, I mean, you have had neighbors in your community growing up.
Oh, yeah. Growing up, we lived next to Miss Madeline and Mr. Dominic, who had immigrated from Italy.
Yeah.
I knew them when they were in their, 60s and 70s.
You knew them well because you didn't want to go to your house for dinner. You went to their house.
So Miss Madeline was an amazing cook who, she'd grown up in Italy before she moved to the U.S. And so she would invite her Italian friends over to make pasta and other dishes together. And it was really cool because as a little girl, I got to go be a part of that. And so it really gave me a glimpse on what it would be like to be in in Italy, making your pasta with your girlfriends. And she was just an amazing cook. And so my mom was a good cook, but there was one dish that she would make that I did not like.
Was it liver?
It was the lentil stew.
Oh, lentil stew.
My sister has really fond memories of this dinner. It was not my favorite, though.
Yeah. You all have those. Everyone probably has a memory of that meal that
You're like, oh, no, please, not that again.
My mother made liver at times, and I was like, what?
My mom never made liver because she didn't like it as a little girl, so she was like, I am never making it. But Miss Madeline always had an open invite policy, so on the lentil stew nights, I was able to go over and eat yummy Italian food.
It's like running away from home to go eat somewhere else.
Yeah, she was right next door, so it was a really short walk. But fortunately, my mom was not offended. My mom was just like, sure, she understood. And so there was no problem. But it was lovely growing up next to her. But our neighborhood was just really, we lived in Baltimore City, but it looked more like the suburbs. But everybody was just really friendly. And it was very multi-ethnic. And so I just loved that. That for me was just a wonderful foundation to just grow up in a very diverse area. And just everybody just really took care of each other. It was really awesome.
Yeah, that's the thing about when you look at the neighborhoods that you're in. I remember growing up and even going back to visit my parents. I was there recently last week. And even though the people don't live there anymore and the homes that are there, the house is still branded as that's that person's house, and this person's house, and that person's house. It's like it was the person who used to live there, even though they moved away and they may have not been there for 10 years. It's still that house. And you remember the people in that house because maybe they've moved on or they did pass away.
Mm-hmm.
Because the community, you think about it, where we are now, for Jen and I, we look at our home as a family. We've moved multiple times.
Right.
As a family. But you think about your childhood, I was raised and I grew up in the same home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your parents live in the home you were. They lived there before you were born.
Right. So. Yeah, because the year I was, I have a fun, the story that I was, the year I was born, the train fell on the other side of the, all this fun stuff. But growing up in that neighborhood, you meet all the people and you see how things have developed and changed. Like going back recently, I look back and my mom's like, oh, you haven't seen that? Oh, that's changed like two years ago. I didn't know that.
Yeah, we have. Yeah, when we went for Christmas, we weren't like traveling around the area.
No, but even just going back into, because where Jen grew up, it wasn't far from, and this is where we're dating, not dating, or dating, you know, in relationship, but the Memorial Stadium where the Baltimore Colts used to play football.
Yes.
And I remember going to the actual stadium location of where the stadium used to be because they demolished it. Mm-hmm. But then now you have the Baltimore Ravens that are playing, you know, a little bit further down, but just the community of where it used to be and how people would always reminisce and talk about, oh, I remember when this was. And it's the same thing at any town. Like if you think back to yourself, you would go back to your, not you, but anyone who's listening, think about a time that you maybe go back to your hometown or an area and you remember, oh, remember when we went to that baseball game that was here? Remember that the fair that would always happen at this time, and maybe it doesn't happen anymore, or maybe it's still going on, like a traditional thing that always happens every single year. Mm-hmm. Like when we lived in Pennsylvania, they did, it was the longest, like the longest running street fair
in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania.
Yes.
Yes. What was that called? Jubilee?
Jubilee Day.
Yes. That was pretty cool. That really brought the community together too.
Right. But everyone comes in droves, and then you have the farm show that happens in January. So you think about all these things that happen in your life that, well, why do you go back to that? So like when people go back to college for their alumni reunions, mm-hmm. and those things, you know, do you see yourself taking your own children or just you yourself personally going back to something that was important to you as a child? It may still be there. It may mm-hmm. not, but at least you still go to travel to go see it.
Yes. Yeah. And I think with us having moved a bunch with our kids, it's like giving them those memories, you know, so that they can remember, you know, various things from, we lived in Pennsylvania until 2015, and then we moved to North Carolina, and then we moved out of North Carolina.
But even in Pennsylvania, we were in different places within there.
Yeah, we just celebrated our second anniversary of living here. So, but yeah, it's like, you know, just really, it's wonderful to have those memories and to talk about them as a family, you know, and to share your story from when you were a kid and the things that impact you, you know, or the things that you learn, those skills, those vacations you take, those things that really are a part of you, and then to see how that's affected you in your life, you know, how you've used that.
Because even just thinking about, I mean, you triggered just vacations and times. I mean, vacations are all different for everybody, and mm-hmm. how you do vacations or trips. I mean, I grew up in New Jersey, and there was places, and if you guys are listening and you know these places, there's a place called Wild West City. It was literally they just had a Wild West City area, and you could go in a stagecoach, and they would come, and, you know, bandits would come and rob you. And there's another place called Land of Make Believe and Fairy Tale Forest and all these places that are. And then, of course, there was the documentary done a number of years ago. But for those who are listening and remember, it was Action Park, was this, you know, water
that
park.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah, water park. you can look at YouTube's of Action Park. There were some rides that were not the safest when people get injured. You know, you had the mountain sledding thing where you sat in the little sledding. It was along the hills, and it was like a bobsled thing in a way. It was that same kind of sledding area, and you push this handle forward, and the sled went down on wheels, and when you pulled it back, that was the brake system. Well, some people just didn't believe in the brake system, and they're flying off the left and the right. And so it sounds like fun. Action Park sounds great, but there was a couple things that happened.
Too much action.
But that was great to go as a kid.
It sounds like it. I know. That does sound like fun.
But even for you, I mean, you had your vacations and going to DC.
Yeah, we went to the beach every summer. Yeah, that was
our thing.
We would go to DC too. That was, you know, significant. That was impactful, you know, just to go to the nation's capital and who were around.
But creating those memories is a big one, because you can go back and reminisce when you start talking about, it's almost that high school classmate or that college classmate that you, when you see them again, you reminisce, like things pick up where you left off.
Yes.
Where you say, hey, remember when we did this? And remember when we did that? And we start talking about different things. And I can't believe I did that.
Okay. So I have to tell a story about one of my college roommates. She was, because I just saw her this past weekend at that tournament. And when she came to our college, she had been raised in Taiwan. And she was going to college in Pennsylvania. She was a missionary kid. And in order to, remember, this is the early 90s, and there was no internet yet. And so in order to communicate with her parents.
And we still had phones that were.
Were attached to the wall. Nobody had a cell phone. But in order to communicate with her parents, like she needed to be able to email. Her dad in Taiwan had email. And so she taught our college what they needed to know in order to get that in place for her. I don't even know how they did it, to be honest, but she got it. She was the first person to email. I think this was like early 90s because she graduated the same year as us. But I remember explaining to my dad. Now, my dad built computers and he loved all things technology. But I remember explaining to him, like, Dad, she just types into her computer and she hits a button and it goes all the way on the other side of the world to her dad's computer. That was how I explained email for the very first time to somebody. So that was very impactful.
It is. That's like talking to people about what a word processor is.
Yes.
And then you went straight to a computer.
I did. Well, yeah, because it's funny to think, like, I'm glad I remember how I described email because it cracks me up now to think of.
Oh, I just can't imagine. I think back to when we, I mean, gosh, I was taking home ed classes in junior high school, not middle school, and having to do typewriter classes where we weren't really typing. They just had you do two letters, like semicolons, and you had to do like pumpkin designs where you're like doing A, semi, and you just like hit the return and then thing would go up. And I'm like, what am I learning? I'm drawing pictures with a typewriter.
Our kids have it so differently now.
It is. You look back at it and it seems like we're relics.
Yes. Yeah.
But we get to share those experiences.
Fun. I know. And it is fun to think back because even though we say like things are so different for our kids, like one day they're going to be talking to their kids about what it was like for them. You know how things are different, you know, down the road compared to what they're experiencing now.
Yeah. And that's the big thing about it, that while we've taken kind of this trek going back into our own experiences as, you know, when we, our passions and interests or just the things that we've experienced. I mean, we can go on about different parts of our childhoods and more specific examples, but the biggest trek on this was, you know, we're building a relationship with our family, our parents at that time, you know, we're taking bits and pieces of them and then creating our own foundation for what we want to be doing, like what our enjoyments are. You know, like I got involved in what I did. And I don't know if I've shared this before, but I got involved in certain things that I did for the, you know, playing tennis and running primarily because of my dad and having a relationship with him because he did those things. Primarily tennis first because he went to the tennis court and the only way I would be able to spend time with him if I went with him. Mm-hmm. So if I, you know, he had a busy week and he would, on Sundays, he would go almost the entire morning at times. If I wanted to see my dad, I had to go with him to do that. And then he decided he wanted to do a marathon and I'm like, okay, what are you doing? And he did two of them and it was, and then now he talks to me about, you know, as soon as I finished my race on Saturday, I had to make sure I called my parents because my mom was telling me, your dad wants to know how you did. Your dad wants to know how you did. And my mom always jokes with me about that because they've given awards before when I've done races where I told my mom they gave me a cookie. And she says, they gave you a cookie. In my mind, I know what I'm talking about, but they gave you a tree cookie where they actually cut like the section of the tree and they brand it with the award on it. So my mom always talks about, so what cookies did you get this time? And I said, oh, I got a whole bunch of cookies this time. Actually, I didn't, but it was, but my father is kind of living his memories of when we were growing up through me now. And I kind of, he enjoys that part of different things. I really enjoy having that time. And that's the same time now it goes on to our own kids.
Right.
You know, we're exposing, we've been exposing a lot of ourselves to them. And they take a little bit of us in all.
Oh, you mean like
our interests and our.
Yes. Yeah. We've been sharing a lot of that with them. And then, you know, it's fun to come up with things as a family too, or to see things that the kids get really interested in.
Like they love playing Skippo and your mother loved playing Skippo and you play Skippo.
Right. Yeah. We made that a family game.
Family games.
And then because you have always been very athletic, you know, like you've really taught the kids a lot of different skills, you know, like playing different games outside, or we like to go biking together because we have one child who likes to run, but the rest of us are like, we'd rather bike while you run. So we like to do that. Or go paddleboarding, you know, things like that. But it's important to find things to do together that you all will enjoy, and also to try new things. That's definitely one of the tools, is to be willing to try new things that somebody else, you know, either in your friend group or your family, you know, they really like to do the thing, you know, try new things.
Well, it's just the communities that are out there. I mean, there's so many meetup groups and community groups that are out there. Even if you're, I mean, if you're a runner, there's a lot of these running stores and these places that have, even the organizers of the races have running groups that get together and meet. And it's really encouraging to see the people that come out, because you hear the stories. I'm a pacer for races, where I'm the person that runs a particular pace for marathons or half marathons, as well as also running my own races that I do. So I'll be running another marathon this coming weekend in this area. And the thing about when you're there, you get to talk to the people while you're running. You say, "Hey, where are you all from?" And these people look at you really strange that I'm talking to them while I'm running this pace. And they're going, "Okay, we're dying here. We're focusing on this race. And here you are talking to us." And like, that's what I do. I'm there to be the encourager while they're running. And that's what builds a relationship with some people. And I think that that's the same kind of thing that you need to find for yourself, is have somebody that can encourage you, reach out to, whether it's in your own church. I know I've done activity groups in our churches as opposed to a Bible study, because you may just want to get together with people who are doing the like-minded activities and things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's really good to have that community, because in this day and age, people are just so used to doing their own thing and forget about community. It's not always, you know, in the forefront of everybody's mind, because we're busy people, but it's so important to have community.
It is. And that's probably our big tool that you really want. And also the strong takeaway. Mm-hmm. The takeaway of it is that you want to have a community from within that, having that strong foundation to be able to encourage one another, whether your own family, whether your friends, you know, you just want to be able to reach out and connect as best as you can.
Right. Because like, invite people over, and don't feel like your house has to be perfect before people come over. Because a lot of times people don't come.
Is this, am I recording this right now?
He's saying that because before we have people over, I tend to go like, we have a lot to do. But what I mean
if everything had a place, then we wouldn't have to clean as much.
But what I mean is that if people are listening and they're like, "Oh, that sounds great, but there's no way. My house is not pretty. My house would not be ready," or any of those things. Like, there are other places you can meet, sure. You can meet at a park or something. But it's also good just to be like, just welcome. There's something really welcoming about when somebody invites you over to their home and, you know, gives you some water or some tea or something, you know, and you just have time together. Like, it's so good. And plus, the people coming over aren't going to have perfect homes. They're going to feel welcomed, you know, and they're going to feel like, "Oh, I could have people over to my house now, too." And it's like,
they're all going to say, "Oh, their house is worse than ours. We're good." But that's kind of where it stemmed from earlier when we were talking about the people in our community, when, you know, Jen was saying, you know, the Miss Madeline going into her home and having the meals and meeting. And for me, you know, growing up and seeing that used to be that person's house, going out to your own community, trying to meet your next door neighbors, meeting the people that are around you, connecting that way, because that's what really helps build, you know, that community itself, and also helps you build a stronger foundation for you to feel as part of something.
Yeah. And that's something that we've started doing in our own neighborhood, is just having dinners on Sunday evenings, inviting, you know, like having a potluck. So that way everybody can just bring a dish to share and just have time together. And that's become like one of my favorite times of the month. It's just having, you know, each month we do that. And so just getting to know people better. So,
I mean, we were meeting a lot of people in the RV park when they were coming through, but there was no, that they were there for that time and gone.
Right. So that was just like super quick. So
a lot of Canadians came through. That's the one thing that I think we discussed that in one of our earlier ones.
Yeah, that was just really fun. So yeah, that was cool because you got to meet a lot of people. And then now that we're in a neighborhood, you know, we get the same people, you know, over, and that has been a joy. So yeah, that's a good takeaway, just to think of who you can reach out to and do it. Go out to coffee, go out to lunch, you know, or have people over, you know, because when you have people over, then your whole family can be involved. And that's just really cool, too.
So it seems like we covered a lot.
Yes.
Kind of went through the entire thing. Like, you guys all got to hear Jen laugh hysterically and and catch your breath. I mean,
yes.
I can describe, you know, she was beet red and she's she was huddled over.
One day we'll put these on YouTube. I'm not ready for that yet, but sometime soon. We've been having people say, you're like, when are you going to start your YouTube? So,
well, the fact that we have the technology already just to kind of go through this, it's hard enough to figure out. We'll figure out the next
we'll
part.
We'll get there one day.
We'll get that there.
But in the meantime, we're so grateful that you're listening and that you're here. Thank you.
Yeah. So it's definitely was the, like we mentioned earlier, those three things of the, our trek was just taking you guys all back there. The tools were, you know, connecting with the, just with your, I guess, connecting with your past to be able to help encourage and strengthen mm-hmm. your future and what you're going through, and your takeaways. Just make the most of what you have, really. Mm-hmm. And don't really, you know, don't
yeah,
be too
don't
afraid.
Wait. Don't wait to have like something else. Just do it now.
Yeah. Like, that's the biggest thing. You know, it's and finding those opportunities, because there's a lot of things that are out there that you can get involved in. Hey, if I can cross stitch, anyone can.
Yes.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, find a thing that you can do with friends, with family, like, you know, just playing games or doing crafts or things like that.
I'm always amazed at how many clubs are out there, especially the meetup clubs when you meet. Like, there are people who get together and they play board games all the time.
That's right.
And do different things.
That's right. That's a great way to meet people.
So how they can, so comments that they need to, if they have any
our
comments.
Our email, and we'll put this in the show notes too, but our email is throwopenyourdoors@gmail.com. And we're also on Instagram, throwopenyourdoors. And then you also have an Instagram where they can come, they can go and see pictures of you running.
Oh, they do? Okay. I can do that. Yeah. I'm at Trail Running Papa.
Yeah.
That's who I am.
We'll put that in the show notes too.
So the biggest thing we always say is just keep alert for what God will do next in your life, because you just never know.
Yes. Have a great week.
Yeah. Thank you for listening, and we will.
We'll see you next week.
We'll see you. We'll talk to you.
We'll talk to you next week. Yes.